This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. Busy night last night in the college football world. Lots of chatter. And if you are a college football fan, and why would you be listening to this podcast if you weren't? I'm sure you've heard plenty about it, and we will discuss it a little bit differently. Yes, the Notre Dame fan is going to avoid the controversial takes out there, but we will discuss the latest rankings, what it means from a futures standpoint, because at the end of the day, this is a betting podcast. Wes Reynolds will join us here in just a little bit. Brett Ciancia later on in the podcast. And we've been teasing it. We do have news and how we are going to handle some swag for you guys, our loyal listeners to this podcast all year long. But let's get into the rankings that came out on Tuesday night, the penultimate rankings for the college football playoff. And I think a couple of things we know. Ole Miss going to be hosting a playoff game. Texas A&M going to be hosting a playoff game. Oklahoma more than likely hosting a playoff game unless Texas Tech were to lose. So that's where things could get a little bit wacky. Indiana, Ohio State, they're locked in on a bye. Georgia, not locked in on a bye, though. I would say the SEC champion, has a good feel of a bye. But I think when we look at the betting market for who's going to get into the playoff, that's where our conversation should start. So Notre Dame is now 10. They get jumped by Alabama. BYU is 11. Miami is 12. Vanderbilt, 14. Adios, you're not getting in. Texas, 13. Adios, you're not getting in. I will say this real quickly, and I mentioned this to Mitch Moss when I walked into the studio on Tuesday night prior to primetime, and it was Texas was minus 950 to miss the playoff. That was free money. FanDuel had it out there. DraftKings did not. Unfortunately, I did not have the capabilities when I saw those numbers to get down on Texas to miss the playoff. So always keep an eye on these betting markets, because sometimes there's just going to be things that are a bit off, like what we talked about earlier in the week with the Tulane to make or miss the playoff market versus the money line. To make the playoff was plus 125. The money line was plus 115. Didn't add up. Tulane gets in with a win, and we know that North Texas gets in with a win as well. But Notre Dame versus Miami, how does this whole thing play out? Nobody really knows, right? There's so much inconsistencies from what we hear from the committee. And, you know, I was certainly chuckling a little bit regarding the comments why Alabama jumped Notre Dame to number 9, because they beat a 5-7 Auburn football team. They said it was an impressive win. They were impressive in the first half. Well, they blew a 17-point lead. They had a post-game win expectancy of less than 50%. That all being said, I never thought Alabama should have been behind Notre Dame. So maybe they righted that wrong. The way I see it playing out personally, and this is just my 2 cents on the matter, I think Alabama jumping Notre Dame gave the committee a little bit of a buffer. If Alabama loses to Georgia, I think they drop back to number 10. Notre Dame hops back over Alabama. If Alabama beats Georgia and BYU loses to Texas Tech, that's the scenario, in my opinion, where Miami gets into the playoff. I think then you have 10 and 11 next to each other, and that's where you finally see the head-to-head come into play, and that's where Miami pops over Notre Dame. Throughout this whole process, Notre Dame and Miami have never been next to each other. Remember, the first playoff rankings came out the week after Miami lost to SMU. So they opened up at 18 despite a 6-2 record, and Notre Dame was number 10. But slowly but surely, Miami has been creeping up those rankings. They've been playing better football, and they're getting closer now to Notre Dame. So in my opinion, the parlay, so to speak, for Miami to get into the playoff would be Alabama to beat Georgia, BYU to lose to Texas Tech. BYU beats Texas Tech, Notre Dame and Miami, adios, they're gone. I think quietly the committee is hoping for that to happen, because I think Texas Tech sitting at number 4 right now has more than enough buffer to stay in the top 10. if they were to lose to BYU in a rematch, BYU would then get the auto bid as the Big 12 champion. I think there's one more wrinkle, and I've heard this mentioned by a couple of people, actually a buddy of mine on Tuesday night texted this to me. What if Virginia loses to Duke and the ACC is looking like they're going to get shut out? Does that pressure lead to Miami jumping Notre Dame? I don't know. There's a lot of questions we don't know the answers to. There's a lot of inconsistencies. I know that Texas hopping Vanderbilt, a lot to do with the head-to-head, despite having more losses, got everyone all fired up. So I'm not going to get into who should be in, who should be out. All I care about is from a betting standpoint. How do we bet this? Do we bet Miami to make the playoff at plus 650? Do we bet Notre Dame to miss it at plus 380? How do we bet this current situation? Or do we just sit back and say, we have no idea. It's the committee. Who the hell knows what they're going to do? I do think if you were to bet the market right now, I would probably bet Notre Dame to miss the playoff at plus 380. There were a couple of things that were mentioned that if they're side by side in, I believe, the teleconference with reporters, that the head-to-head would be utilized. Now, you could ask the question, if BYU loses to Texas Tech again, why should they be punished when Miami's not playing and move back behind Miami despite being ahead of them right now? I don't know. I'm just throwing my hands up. I'm just telling you, they change the rules, it feels like, on a daily basis. Bruce Feldman, a very mild-mannered gentleman, was all fired up and flustered last night, dropping F-bombs on Twitter. Like, this is where we're at right now with this whole situation. So for me, if you were to bet it, I think there are two ways to bet it. I think Notre Dame to miss at plus 380, not saying a full unit play. Also, if you were with us in the offseason when we bet Notre Dame to win the title at 30-1, certainly a decent hedge at plus 380 for them to miss the playoff. I have played a little bit on Notre Dame to miss, a little bit of a happiness hedge, because come Sunday, I might be very upset because my team is not in, and I'm not saying they deserve it or not, but I'm just upset because the team I cheer for, and I think it's the best team they've had in over 30 years, could be left out. And look, I said it last week. Notre Dame lost two games. If they miss the playoff, it's their own fault. Beat Texas A&M. Beat Miami. If Miami gets left out, it's your own fault. Beat Louisville as a two-touchdown favorite. Beat SMU on the road. So, you know, that's ultimately the way that I'm looking at this whole, you know, scenario moving forward when it comes to the college football playoff. But Notre Dame plus 380 to miss, I think, is maybe worth a little bit of a sprinkle, if you will. And then how about this? My buddy Jeremiah pointed this out looking at the futures market, and I want to give him credit for it, because if Miami gets in, okay, they're plus 650 to get in right now. If they were to get in, they're most likely headed to Texas A&M, where they'll be a short underdog. Right now, Circa has Miami at 200-1 to win the national championship. So if they were to get in, are they going to be a massive underdog? They're not going to be the level of an underdog James Madison will be in the first round, or a North Texas or a Tulane. They're going to be pretty close. I mean, you look at the power ratings that are out there. I mean, they're a top 10 football team right now. So they're not going to be a massive underdog. So I do think for a very small play, if you're looking to get off of a 300 or a 30-1 ticket that you may have had on Notre Dame like I did from the offseason, or you're just looking at getting a team in the dance at 200-1, I do think there is a scenario where Miami gets in and 200-1 is not worth a bet. So none of these are full unit plays, but those would be the ways that I would personally bet the situation that they have. So I'll lay it out this way, and then we'll get into the giveaways. I think Notre Dame gets in if Alabama wins. Oh, let me rephrase. I think Notre Dame gets in if Georgia wins and BYU loses. I also think it would help if Boise State won the Mountain West Championship. That is a Notre Dame win. So that would, in theory, enhance their resume while they're not playing. And lastly, not that it's make or break, but I think it would help if Virginia beat Duke. So Notre Dame scenario, I think they're big. Well, I know they're big Texas Tech fans, because if Texas Tech beats BYU, or BYU beats Texas Tech, it's over. Texas Tech and BYU are both in the playoff. Miami, on the other hand, I think they get in. If Duke beats Virginia, I think that would help. I also think they get in if Texas Tech pummels BYU and Alabama beats Georgia. If Texas Tech goes out and wins by 20-plus like they did the first time they played, I think BYU drops. And I think when they are head-to-head next to each other, Notre Dame and Miami, I think that's where Miami gets the final hop over Notre Dame. So that's just my two cents on how I think could this play out. We have no idea with the committee. They seem to make up the rules as they go. They've seemed to like Notre Dame the whole way through, but now they are on the cutting room floor, and you know both these teams are very close from a statistical standpoint. Let me just run down these numbers real quickly using some of the metrics that are available, and we know that the committee uses some of these. All right. ESPN's FPI, Notre Dame 3, Miami 7. ESPN's strength of record, Notre Dame 13, Miami 14. Notre Dame's strength of schedule, 42nd, Miami 44th. That's the ESPN number. Sagarin, Notre Dame 2, Miami 6. Strength of schedule per Sagarin, Notre Dame 32, Miami 28. Game control, Notre Dame 5, Miami 6. SP Plus rating, Notre Dame 5, Miami 9. SP Plus offense, Notre Dame 7, Miami 18. SP Plus defense, Notre Dame 11. Miami 10. It's very close. And at the end of the day, if they're next to each other in the rankings, I think Miami gets in over Notre Dame. So I think Notre Dame is hoping for that buffer. So they are big Bulldog fans this week. All right, we'll get into Wes Reynolds and his plays for the upcoming podcast and weekend here in just a moment. But we got some giveaways. So as you know, Rainbow Authentics, our friends out on the island, have been a proud sponsor of this podcast all season long. I rock the Rainbow Authentics hat. I've got the Tokyo Toe shirt on right now. And they have given us some swag. I've wanted to give out some swag to you guys for being loyal listeners all year long. The numbers have been just through the roof. And it is a testament to you guys that you've hung around with us. Matt has had a really good year. My year, to be honest, for the season, I believe we're 44-44-4. So have to do better. The win totals, by the way, went 7-1. So yippee, we were able to have some good win totals. We got a couple of futures out there still. But regardless, you guys have been here every single week, multiple times a week, hitting that 5-star review, giving us the ratings, which have helped us bump as high as I think we got up to like number 70 something in the iTunes chart early on in the season. We've started our YouTube page. You guys continue to subscribe there. If we get to 1,000 subscribers, that would be awesome. But here's what we're going to give away here to you guys. So we have an email address, cfbpod, P-O-D, at vsin.com, cfbpod at vsin.com. Send me an email saying that you want to be in the drawing for our giveaways. What do we have for you? So we've got a couple of hats. So the Rainbow Authentics hat, we've got two of these we will be giving away for free. Everything will be sent to you guys for free, of course. So two Rainbow Authentics hats. They are not the rainbow colored one. They're the gold one. The rainbow colored one is available over at rainbowauthentics.com. So we got two hats. We also have the Chase Game shirts that were made. So the Chase Game T-shirts that were made over at Rainbow Authentics. We have two extra larges, three larges, and one 2X. So when you send me your email, send me what size you are, and we will make sure that that one is sent to you. So once again, send us your shirt size. But the grand prize winner, so all of you will be entered into this. We've got this mini helmet, Hawaii mini helmet. On the flip side, over the islands, signed by Timmy Chang. So a signed mini helmet by the head coach of the Rainbow Warriors that has won us a lot of money this year. Undefeated against the spread at home, 26-1, our guy Timmy Chang is, since going back to his alma mater. So there you go. The grand prize, a signed mini helmet. Thanks to our friends over at Rainbow Authentics. And send me an email, cfbpod@vsin.com. We'll keep that open for about a week, and then we will kind of randomize it for you guys. I'm going to put it in a big randomizer and make sure we got one winner, and then we have six giveaways, or six t-shirts and two hats as well. So just a shout out to you guys for listening, and also a shout out to our friends at Rainbow Authentics, who have been a proud sponsor of the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast all year long. We're a big, big help when we went out to Hawaii for that week zero game. And, you know, we appreciate them. By the way, just pointed out, if you want to help give back to Hawaii Athletics, NIL is a big thing. Head on over to rainbowauthentics.com. Also, tokyotoe.com. All portions of the proceeds go to the NIL fund out there in Hawaii. So appreciate you guys. Once again, 5-star review, if you don't mind. If you haven't done so by now, hit those comments. It's huge for our ratings as well. And then on YouTube, youtube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. So once again, the email address, cfbpod@vsin.com. We've got a Timmy Chang signed mini helmet. We've got two Rainbow Authentics hats, six t-shirts we will send out to you guys. So hit us up in the email, and then we will randomize it, pick nine winners, and we'll get those out to you guys maybe next week. So we'll keep reminding you. And before we hit the Army-Navy game, we'll have a couple of winners, and I'll let you know who those winners are on this podcast. Maybe we'll do it next Thursday. How about that? The Thursday, December 11th, we'll announce the winners here on the podcast. So cfbpod@vsin.com. Hit us up. Let's give out some swag to you guys for being such an awesome fan base and listeners all season long. All right, quick break. When we come back, Wes Reynolds. It is the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSIN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And it is Wednesday, of course, so that means the one and only Wes Reynolds joins us here on the podcast, a gentleman who I can only imagine is beaming ear to ear. Oh, I can see him right now wearing his Indiana gear, and he is hoping that he will be partying like it is 1967, and Indiana will be winning the conference championship on Saturday night. Wes Reynolds, I just, before we get into the betting aspect, and I get it, it's a betting podcast, but we're all fans of some team. The fact that your football program, the team that you went to this university, it's a basketball school, and you are going to be attending a Big Ten championship in which your football team is undefeated and taking on undefeated Ohio State. Can put that into context for us. Make sense of it, because, you know, I want to take a step back and talk to an Indiana fan, because this run has been remarkable. It's one thing to go to the playoff a year ago in the expanded field. It's another to be the number two team in the country. And if you win on Saturday as a 4.5-point underdog, you're the number one team in college football.
It is pretty surreal, Tim. And just actually, 2 years ago Monday, so December 1st, that's when Kurt Cignetti had his first press conference, the introductory press conference in Bloomington, the I Win Google Me. And it's hard to believe 2 years later, a win, and they could be the number one team in the college football playoff and the number one seed. You know, last year it was kind of like just a heck of a run, and there was a little bit of, hey, we're happy to be there. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the best we've ever done. And then to come back the next season and to have an undefeated regular season, the first time, by the way, since 1945. And this was different even from 45, because they had a tie that year. So the first undefeated, unblemished, you know, where you won every single game in the regular season, you know, first time in forever. And now to try to win a Big Ten championship for the first time since 1967. And with everything that's happening in the playoff in terms of these conference championship games becoming less and less meaningful, just because the way the playoff system is set up, this is damn meaningful, I think, mm-hmm. to Indiana. It is to me personally, to win a Big Ten title, where it's like, I want this as much as I would want a national championship, honestly, because, you know, you get in the playoff, you have a bad day. There's so much variance there. And we've seen, you know, top seeds get knocked out of the tournament, especially in college basketball. But here it's different because this is the opportunity, I think, for Indiana to eliminate all the doubters, because the doubters were out in full force when Indiana got drummed up in South Bend at Notre Dame, where it's like, oh, they shouldn't have been in the playoff anyway. And then it was like, well, can they really do it again? They kind of caught lightning in a bottle. And then they went to Oregon and won in October. And then some of those doubters were kind of converted a little bit, where it was like, okay, you know, maybe they are for real to do this 2 years in a row. This Kurt Cignetti and these guys have done a hell of a job. This game would eliminate all the doubters. If you were to beat Ohio State in Indianapolis on Saturday, what can anybody say, Tim? What can anybody say about Indiana? Can they say that this is a fluke? Can they say that they got lucky? Can they say this is a joke? They absolutely cannot, because then they're Big Ten champions and then the number one seed. And, you know, maybe at least in the betting market, the co-favorite, but by seeding certainly would be the favorite to win the national championship. So, you know, you're trying to live in the moment here, I think, as a fan, is what everybody is trying to do. But I think all that PTSD of, like, you know, waiting for the other shoe to drop and, oh, we're just happy to be here, that's all gone. That's all gone now. You know, this is a 4, 4.5 point number, some fives out there. And Indiana can absolutely win this game. And the fact that you're actually getting some pundits saying, hey, Indiana's going to take this, Indiana's going to win this game, you would have never expected that, because the goal for Indiana, I think, was to kind of get to like an Iowa or a Wisconsin level. And Kurt Cignetti said, screw that, we're going to be better. And, you know, here Indiana is on Saturday.
It's really, I mean, it's, I think so many fan bases out there, you know, for example, living in Maryland, growing up there, I'm not a Maryland fan, but you think about Kirk Cignetti was the head coach of JMU, a program that, kind of the little brother to anybody in the DMV, whether it be Virginia, Virginia Tech, Maryland. And Kirk Cignetti goes to Indiana and is doing this in such a quick turnaround. And if you're Maryland or if you're even Virginia Tech, you're like, well, what? We could have just had that guy, right?
He's totally changed the paradigm, I think, in college football, because you're looking at this coaching carousel now. And you have all these athletic directors and all these university presidents and boosters and donors and what have you. Like, look at what this guy's doing in Bloomington. Why can't we do that here? And it's just gone absolutely bonkers, this coaching carousel of, like, you know, they think that they're trying to get the next Kurt Cignetti. All these programs are trying to do it. Auburn is trying to do it. Arkansas is trying to do it. All these schools in the SEC. Hell, Penn State, they're still searching for a head coach. They're all trying to find that Kurt Cignetti that can turn this around in such a rapid fashion. And, man, those guys are hard to find, and it's proving to be so in college football.
Well, I think back to the preseason, and, you know, I didn't bet on or against Indiana. I thought they would be good. I didn't think, obviously, they would be this good, and I wish I did, because having a Indiana to win the Big Ten ticket or just over their win total, you know, 2 years ago, you and I discussed their win total at 5.5 and said, this is an easy over. Didn't think it would be as easy as it was, but I did not play their win total over this year because I thought the schedule was harder, and it was, and they went out and they beat Iowa on the road. They beat Oregon on the road. You were there for that. So let's get into this championship game. And I brought it up on VSiN Primetime when you joined us on Monday night, Wes. You and I love situational spots. And that's why bowl betting, to me, is a great endeavor to try to bet those bowl games, look at the motivation, what are the opt-outs, all of that. Oddly enough, and we'll see how it plays out. Personally, I'll just point it out. I have not bet this game yet. I believe you have. I know Matt Newman's has, and we'll break it down tomorrow with Matt. But I think there might be a little bit of a letdown factor for Ohio State, because they won the title a year ago. They know that seeding isn't the end of the world, considering they were the 8th seed a year ago, Wes. But you mentioned it. Indiana, this is the Super Bowl. And you pointed it out beautifully. So, is this a letdown spot for Ohio State? And what do you make of this number right now as we record market-wide sitting at 4.5?
It could be a letdown spot. You never want to say that it's totally going to be, because the Ohio State is the best program in college football. Okay. Sure. They are the gold standard, and then they've earned that right to, you know, consider themselves the gold standard. So it's tough to say this is going to be a letdown, but I do think this means more to Indiana. I think this clearly does, because of not just the historical aspect of it and being able to call yourself Big Ten champion, being able to eliminate all the doubters. And Kurt Cignetti and some of the players on the team have talked about that. It's like, you know, we took a lot of guff last year. We took a lot of crap because against the two best teams, we didn't show up to, you know, to be able to be competitive with them, with Ohio State and Notre Dame. Now, those were the last two teams standing, by the way, in the national championship game. So there's no shame in losing to those teams, but they weren't as competitive as maybe they should have been. And that motivated these guys in the offseason. I think it's continued throughout the season with these two teams. In terms of the number, it's actually right where I made it at about 4.5, 5, because I thought 3 was too low and I thought 6 or 7 was too high. It did eventually reach 6, and then the money came in on Indiana. I took 5, and there's still some 5s available, but I think it's probably going to be, you're not going to see a lot of movement, I don't think. I don't think you're going to see one lopsided side or the other in terms of money. I think this is probably where it's going to settle come kickoff on Saturday night, because the numbers are so even. Ohio State, number one in EPA, expected points added margin. Indiana, by the way, right behind at number 2. You know, offensive success rate, number 1 for Indiana, number 4 for Ohio State. So many of these numbers are pretty darn even when you look at, you know, per rush, defensive success rate, offensive success rate, quality drive ratio, et cetera, et cetera. All of these stats are pretty damn similar with these two teams. Then you just got to look at the fact that Ohio State, yeah, they have more talent player for player. They have more 5-star guys clearly than Indiana, but I think Indiana really embraces that. And Fernando Mendoza talked about that in the media availability after the Old Oak and Bucket win on Friday night. He said, Pat Coogan, who is a transfer from Notre Dame, one of the few from like a big premier program, who is one of the starting offensive linemen for Indiana. And that's why he came to Indiana, because he wanted to start. He had lost his starting position. He goes, Coogan gave this pregame speech, and Mendoza's describing it and saying, you know, we were all guys that either, you know, lost our starting spots, or we're all FCS guys or JMU guys. Like we're a bunch of misfits, basically, is what Coogan said to the guys, you know, in terms of a pregame speech. Like, nobody wanted us, and now we're here. And I think Indiana takes a pride in that, is that, hey, we weren't 5-stars coming out of high school like all these Ohio State guys. But you know what? Aiden Fisher and D'Angelo Pons and Fernando Mendoza and Elijah Surratt and Omar Cooper, et cetera, et cetera. They're 5-star guys now. So none of that matters in the past. And I think that they embrace that they were kind of the unwanted guys and they were the overlooked guys playing against the team that gets all the players that you could ask for and then some. And I think that that motivates Indiana, and that's just one of those little things beneath the surface that I think is going to materialize on the field on Saturday.
Pat Coogan went viral last year during the playoffs. He stepped in for the injury to Notre Dame's then center, Ashton Craig, and he was the leader of that offensive line, and someone took a clip of it. He said, I believe it was against Georgia, to play 4 quarters of bleep you football. He is definitely a speech guy, so it doesn't surprise me to hear that he is kind of rallying the troops there at Indiana. Let me ask you this question, because, look, I'm not trying to diminish Ohio State, and I do think they are the best defense in college football. Oklahoma has been fantastic as well defensively, but who's the best offense that Ohio State has faced? Because I do have questions regarding that. And, you know, you look at the dominant performance that they had on Saturday against Michigan. But, you know, Michigan is certainly not a team that really scares you all that much. So you could say, is it Washington on the road? Is it Texas? How are they? Weren't really playing all that well offensively, you know, in the first game of the season. So Indiana, if you look at, you know, Brett Ciancia's numbers, who's going to come on the podcast here in just a little bit, he has Indiana 5th in opponent adjusted offense, sitting there at number 5 in the country. He has Michigan at 15, which I think is a little bit high, but and in Washington at 18, is this going to be the most challenging offense that Ohio State's defense, which is legit and I think the best in the country, has faced all year?
I think certainly it is, and I was making that point actually with Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis on our morning show on VSiN, and I was talking about the fact that Ohio State, really their only test this year was in August against Texas, where teams are still trying to figure out where they are, and that was of course a kind of a battle of attrition that Ohio State ended up winning 14-7, and Ohio State's offense didn't look all that crisp in that game, but you can, you know, ignore that because it's the first game of the season and you're playing against a quality opponent with a quality defense in their own right against Texas. But Ohio State essentially has not been tested over the last 3 months. You know, brief tests, maybe. The Penn State game was a game for 30 minutes, and then Ohio State dominated the second half. Same thing with Michigan. It was 17-9 at the half, and then Ohio State pulled away. Meanwhile, you look at Indiana over the last couple months, and they have had some tests. The game at Oregon certainly was a test. The game at Iowa before that certainly was a test, and they had to score late in the final few minutes to win that game. The game against Penn State, of course, we know the heroics, Mendoza to Cooper in the back of the end zone on that last drive with no timeouts, where he took a sack on the first drive. So somehow, some way, they drove the length of the field and got the score to win in Happy Valley. Indiana has been in these tests late, right? They've been where it's like, okay, this is kind of, you know, this is maybe a little bit of pucker in time here. You know, this is scary, scary stuff here for Indiana. Ohio State hadn't had that. And that's a credit to Ohio State because of how good they are. But nobody has really been able to stand up to them. So you do wonder with Ohio State, with all the talent they have, with all the pedigree they have, what are they going to be like late if this is a close game that I think a lot of people expect it to be? Are they going to be able to withstand the pressure? We know that Mendoza and company have been able to do that in the fourth quarter. Can Julian Sain, as talented as he is, redshirt freshman, you know, five-star guy, can they withstand that even with all their talent when you haven't been tested late? And I think that that's maybe the one question you have about Ohio State amidst all the great statistical accolades and the pedigree, what have you. That's the question I think you have with this team. What is it going to be like when you know, it's on the table and the money's on the line late in a very close game?
So, Wes, let's flip it to Indiana's defense versus this Ohio State offense. And the one thing that I've been very impressed about here lately is that Ohio State is proving that they can do it in a multitude of ways, right? Bo Jackson has emerged as a pretty damn good running back here for Ohio State. And, you know, they had that kind of sucked the life out of the arena type of drive in the fourth quarter against Michigan, where they had the ball for 12 minutes. It ended in a field goal, but that essentially just ended the game and took the life out of that Michigan team. A 20-play, 81-yard drive for 11 minutes and 56 seconds. How do you think Indiana's defense stacks up against Ohio State? I think many people know the name D'Angelo Pons. He's a legit lockdown corner. Is he going to travel on Jeremiah Smith? What's your feel of defense of Indiana versus the offense of Ohio State?
Yeah, I think the whole key is, you know, what can they get in terms of a pass rush? What can they do in terms of defensive success rate against dropback? Second best in the country for Indiana, but fourth for Ohio State offensively. Can they get pressure? And the guy that's really emerged on the Indiana defense this year is actually a guy by the name of Stephen Daly. We know what Mikhail Kamara did last year, where he was an All-American, has been a little bit quiet this year. Part of that is because he's getting double teamed a little bit more, because everybody's like, okay, we got to block that guy. So what it's opened it up is it's opened it up for Stephen Daly. Stephen Daly, by the way, what a story he is. He is a transfer from Kent State, where he didn't win a game last year. 0-12. And now he's 12-0 and one game away from being the number one seed in the college football playoff. You know, what a great story he is. If you watch the bucket game against, granted, lesser competition with Purdue, he dominated that game. He was an absolute wrecker in terms of the TFLs, in terms of getting pressure. So these guys on the defensive line are going to have to get that pressure. And I think that's really been the difference. When you look at Indiana last year versus this year, they are much better at the line of scrimmage. You know, they've got game wreckers on that defensive line, and they actually have a little bit of depth at those positions. Now, you can only withstand a couple injuries, because they've been without their best offensive lineman, Drew Evans, for the last couple weeks. I think he's going to be back for this one. But I think at the line of scrimmage, they can stand up against these guys on the defensive side of the ball. And that's what they couldn't do in Columbus last year. Even though they got off to that early lead, you could tell at the line of scrimmage they were just overmatched. And you also saw it in the playoff game against Notre Dame. And they went and they had to get better. It's like, we got to get some veteran guys and we got to get better in the trenches on both sides. And that's what I think Indiana did. And I think that's been the main difference. You know, not necessarily Mendoza, who I think is a little bit better, is better than Rourke, their previous quarterback, Curtis Rourke. Yep. Granted, Curtis was playing with the torn ACL, but the offensive personnel, I think the offense has been cooking anyway, you know, with good game plans and they just have a good system. But the biggest difference with this team is that they are much better at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball.
All right. So to sum it up, Wes, right now, market sits 4.5. Total, we'll call it 48. There are some 47s. Haven't really talked total. Any feel on the total in this one at Lucas Oil on Saturday night?
I would like to get 24 because I'm seeing mostly 23.5, and this is for the first half, mind you, because I do think that this could be a slow start.
Okay.
Where they're kind of feeling each other out a little bit, and maybe there's some nerves and you get a, you know, a couple early three and outs from both sides, you know, in that environment on Saturday. And they're kind of, you know, maybe they start to kind of get it going a little bit. Mid late second quarter where the offenses start to get it going, they kind of figure it out. So would lean under, especially first half, because I think the scoring could pick up in the second half. And this total, by the way, 48 pretty much in the market. That seems like a low total for the, you know, potential explosiveness and being that it's in an indoor track, climate controlled environment there in Indy at Lucas Oil. I think it probably starts out a little bit slower. So I would like to maybe get 24 at least. I don't know if 24.5 is coming. You probably have to lay some substantial juice if you want that. There is like some 10.5 in the first quarter. Now you got to lay, I think, like $1.40 at DraftKings, but I think this is going to be a low scoring game very, very early. And then it picks up gradually as you come across.
Yeah, that honestly, that was the way I was thinking as well. So haven't bet it yet. And let's see what happens if we do get a little bit of money come into the market. But 23.5, it's funny. I always I like to make fun of myself. Not a surprise. But of course, I played last week's Michigan-Ohio State game completely wrong. I took first half under. It was first half over, full game under. So I completely botched that here on the podcast. So we'll see if I could figure it out properly for Thursday's episode. But Wes, let's run through the rest of the games. We do have 6 total rematches of the 9 championship games. We'll just kind of go rapid fire chronologically. And I know that you've done your homework on all of these games. You know, the James Madison situation is a unique one. They do show up in the college football playoff rankings at number 25. So the belief is if Duke beats Virginia, James Madison would get the fifth at-large bid. Anything in that game, JMU, this is one of the non-rematches. They are a 23-point favorite with a total of 47.5.
Yeah, that's a lot to lay, obviously, in a conference championship game. But that would be the only way I would look here is with James Madison. And maybe if you don't want to lay that, there could be a possibility to play Troy State team total under. Now, it's a low number. I think I'm seeing like some places 13.5 with juice. But Troy looks like they're going to be down their 2 starting offensive tackles. And they've had you know, quarterback injuries this year. Goose Crowder, by the way, their regular starter, is back. Remember, he missed a few games. I don't know how Troy is going to score here. Mm-hmm. And that total indicates that with 47.5, it's at James Madison, by the way. This is not a neutral site. So this is in Harrisonburg at Bridgeforth Stadium. Boy, it's a big number. It'd be James Madison or nothing. But I think the way maybe to play James Madison, if you're lukewarm about laying 23.5 as high as that in the market, and I kind of am, would be the Troy team total under. But I do think JMU, save for the Washington State game where I did think they were going to cover and they didn't, they got out with a win. They've steamrolled everybody in this conference. They've just been dominant. And I think that dominance is going to continue Friday night.
Well, I also think it helps, too, if you're thinking about narratives. They play on Friday. The ACC championship's not till Saturday. So they could, in theory, keep their foot on the pedal, like we've seen with, you know, Miami yeah. against Pittsburgh scoring late, or Notre Dame trying to score late against Stanford, whatever it may be.
And one thing I will say, sorry to interject, Tim. Yeah. Of course, everybody knows with the coaching carousel that Bob Chesney is now going to UCLA. But, you know, James Madison's been through this before, right? When Cignetti, you know, left a couple of years ago. So you still got some remnants of that team and remnants on that staff. So I don't think that that is going to make that much of a difference here, because we're going to see it probably play out in a couple of games where the coach is leaving. How are these teams going to react? A net zero here, I think, for this game.
You know, another game that is not a rematch, and honestly, this is really high up on my radar. It's a true play-in game for the college football playoff. Both of these teams' coaches are leaving. Eric Morris is going to Oklahoma State from North Texas, and John Summerall is going to Florida. So I don't know if it's a net-net or however you look at that. Right now, Tulane is a 2.5-point underdog at home. There were some threes out there. Those got scooped up. It's a very high number. And obviously with a high number, you would think you're going to get an opportunity in game. My eyes gravitate towards Tulane here. There were threes out there. I was unable to get a three. What do you make of the American Championship? A true play-in game. This is winning in to the college football playoff. Loser goes to another, you know, bowl game. So what do you make of this one on Friday night down in New Orleans?
Yeah, I think the whole thing is if Tulane can score with North Texas, because we know that North Texas can score, and they're so explosive. Mestemaker, the quarterback, and then that's one of the reasons why Morris is getting hired. Morris, of course, from that Mike Leach tree. So we know that, you know, they're air raid and, you know, throw it all, you know, chuck it all over the yard, and, you know, very pass happy, even with their short passes, which are like runs basically in that offense. But North Texas has been able to run the ball too with Caleb Hawkins. They're not necessarily just a pass deal. They actually have a really good rushing attack. And, you know, can Tulane, you know, hang with them in terms of offense? And that's what worries me. Tulane's rush defense, too, you know, bottom half, I think, what, 86 in success rate in terms of rush allowed. So certainly the bottom half of FBS. And I think that North Texas, you know, can run the ball, even if Mestermaker is a little bit off. So I don't know how Tulane, if they're going to be able to go score for score with these guys. And I think Tulane's certainly very capable and they're very good. But maybe I would lean North Texas. I haven't bet this yet. You could perhaps look at Tulane team total under at 31.5, I think, is what I see most widely available out there. But I, you know, with the two coaches leaving, then, you know, that's a different dynamic altogether. But I just think North Texas has been so explosive. Now, Tulane has been there, done that. Of course, they had this conference championship game where they were able to control Army, you know, but a little bit of a different battle here, different offense to prepare for. So small lean to North Texas for me.
Yeah. My question, I'm going to dive into this one a little bit more before the Thursday pod is, the one game that North Texas got run was by South Florida. Now, to your point, is Tulane's offense good enough to do that? And I think that's a fair question to ask. Strength of schedule difference per Sagarin. You look at Tulane's played the 75th most difficult schedule, North Texas 104. So it should be a fun one, no doubt. And that is also a home field game as well. Another home field game on Friday night in the Mountain West is Boise State and UNLV. And, you know, the tiebreaker situation played out and UNLV gets the computers on their side. This is a game that we have seen before. And Wes, looking at the previous point spreads and where we are now, it's pretty fascinating to look at it. So on October 18th, Boise State hosted UNLV. They won 56-31. They were a 13-point favorite. Right now, the market sits at either 3.5 or 4, mostly 4, in favor of Boise State. So a big drop. Now, the obvious is that Maddox Mattson has not been playing. He's expected back. That has been said by Spencer Danielson. What do you make of this spot up there on the Smurf turf? A place that UNLV has never won before. UNLV at Boise, Friday night up there on the turf. What do you make of this one?
And you mentioned with Madsen being ruled in at quarterback for Boise, didn't really see a lot of line movement, did you? I mean, maybe it was already accounted for, the fact that they thought he was going to return, but you would have thought, based on what you laid out there about how UNLV, you know, Boise's been their kryptonite. UNLV has not been able to beat them up there, and yet they're only getting four up there Friday night. I have not checked the weather yet, but I've seen them play up there before. I imagine it's going to be cold in December in Boise. Don't know if it'll be snowing or we'll get any precipitation, but it's probably going to be cold. And yet UNLV kind of hanging there as 4-point underdogs. And UNLV has been a team this year, Tim, credit to Dan Mullen for keeping this rolling. UNLV, I felt, has been fortunate in a couple games. But over the last couple of weeks, and it started with the Hawaii game, UNLV has kind of shown a little bit more toughness that I think that they lacked in years past. Maybe they lacked a little bit last year, is that they're able to run the ball and they're able to win with the power running game, because a lot of that was that go-go offense that they had with the departed offensive coordinator. He's now at Sacramento State. I forget his name. It's just escaping me right now. But they were all about tempo, tempo, tempo. Now they can win with the power running game. And you also have a quarterback, Calandria, who's very mobile. I kind of like UNLV in this game. I think that they're going to hang in here and that they're just a different level of toughness than they were last year against Boise State. And I don't even know how Boise State got in the game. It's a very convoluted formula, yeah, because you would have thought on Friday watching that New Mexico game that went over San Diego State in overtime, hey, they just got in a Mountain West championship game. But somehow they didn't. Like, I feel this should be UNLV in New Mexico, but it's UNLV Boise. It's always seemingly Boise in the Mountain West Conference. But I think on Friday night, it's going to be UNLV in the Mountain West Conference. So I'm going to take the Rebels in the points here.
Yeah, preseason, I wrote it up for the College Football Guide, talked about it here. I did lay $1.25 on Boise State to win the conference. Didn't look like a good bet until the computers worked out our way. I did have New Mexico on Friday against San Diego State. Man, you feel for New Mexico. Win six straight.
I felt like they should have been in. I really would have liked to have seen them against UNLV, just from a fan perspective. I would have liked to have seen that matchup.
Well, and you saw, I mean, they beat the top dogs, right? They beat UNLV. They beat San Diego State, but just the way it played out, UNLV did lose to the two top teams that they played in Boise and New Mexico. But I agree to an extent. You know, they were very impressive. I was there in attendance watching them against Hawaii. Hawaii was a complete no-show in that game, but you got to give credit to UNLV. They dominated that game outside of a busted coverage early in the first quarter, really kind of suffocated a pretty explosive offense there by Hawaii, and that had been UNLV's bugaboo all throughout the year. So going to Saturday, unless, by the way, I guess I don't want to fail to mention it. We do have Kennesaw State, Jacksonville State. This game, Kennesaw, the Owls, hoot hoot, are a 2.5-point favorite. This is a rematch of a game we saw on November 15th. Jacksonville State won the game as a 3.5-point underdog, 35-26. So we're getting a rematch of a game we saw less than a month ago. Does Kennesaw State get their revenge against Jacksonville State?
Brennan Marion, by the way, the name of the coordinator from UNLV I was referring to. I was just like, I can't remember his name. I'm getting old here. But Conference USA Championship game, it'd be over for me. Oh, there's still some 59 out there. And of course, it played to 61 the first time. Kennesaw State is tempo, tempo, tempo. And, you know, they don't take the plays off. They keep going. And they run so many plays per game. So I think that even though these two teams are very familiar with each other, maybe it starts out slowly, so maybe you can get in live. But I think this ends up another high-scoring game between these two teams.
All right, let's get to Saturday. Georgia-Alabama. A lot on the line. I kind of laid it out in the open regarding who I'm cheering for from a standpoint of Notre Dame getting into the playoff. But this is a rematch of a game we got earlier this year between the hedges. Alabama was able to win 24-21. They kind of held on for dear life at the end of that game as they were shut out in the second half. Total sits at 47.5, 48, spread 2.5. I mentioned it with Adam on Monday. The first bet I made of championship weekend, I laid $1.20 on the money line with Georgia. I really like the way that they're playing as of late. I know that Kirby Smart, we had Brian Edwards on the show, handicapper who does a good job with the SEC. He likes Alabama, referenced that Kirby Smart has his issues with the Crimson Tide. The way I've watched these two teams lately, I know Georgia didn't look all that great against Georgia Tech, West, but that second half against Texas was eye-opening to me. I think Georgia gets their revenge here. I think they win. I'm going to lay it on the money line. Once again, I laid it minus 20 right now, $1.35 or so out there. What do you make of the SEC championship?
Yeah, boy, did the committee kind of protect Alabama here a little bit in terms
Wes, hold on, because that was very impressive to win 27-20, get outgained by 120 yards, and you know, it was a gutsy call to go for it on fourth down.
Yes.
That's what Yermark said, you know.
Yeah, Hunter Yurecek, a lot of Arkansas fans. Yurecek, like,
excuse me.
It's like, this is the guy that hired our head coach. Okay, yeah. So yeah, you know. Nevertheless, we digress. They protected Alabama, certainly. So all of a sudden, that gives the committee an out if BYU beats Texas Tech in the Big 12 championship game. Uh-huh. We'll get to that in a minute. And then our Notre Dame and Miami both left out in the cold.
Yep.
Here, you know, and that very well could happen. So probably some very antsy folks up there in South Bend and also down in Coral Gables. But back to this one, I would lean your way to it, Georgia. I haven't bet this. I'd probably go Georgia on the money line. Now, you've got 9 rematches, I believe, this weekend, or of the nine conference championship games are rematches. And it's been about even Steven, I think 500 over the last 25 years, where the Avenger, the team that got beat in the regular season, in terms of the postseason. So it's been about the same. So I don't think there's really any edge there, but I just look at Alabama and I feel like they're struggling to run the ball. Now, I'm going to be interested to see what their game plan is, because Ryan Williams got no targets.
Yeah.
In the Iron Bowl, I had no idea. He was on the side of a milk carton, or he was left back in Tuscaloosa, and you know trying to hitchhike for Mobile or wherever he was. But he was nowhere, and so I think that they're going to want to establish him clearly. But I would lean Georgia here. I think that they have been, even though they haven't been the dominant Georgia of past up front, I still think that maybe they're a little more physical up there than Alabama is. So this would probably be Georgia or nothing on the money line. It's 2.5 now in the market. So you're laying $1.30, $1.35. That'd probably be the way I would go here for this one.
Yeah, it is worth looking. And I've mentioned Alabama and the Oklahoma game, where Oklahoma really was beyond fortunate to win that game, but they won the game and they deserve the credit for it. But they had a post-game win expectancy of under 5%. Going back to the September 27th game that Georgia and Alabama played, Alabama had a 19.7 post-game win expectancy in that one. So, you know, does that kind of revert itself a little bit? I do think, and we talked about Indiana and Ohio State, the SEC championship, you know, the cliche, it just means more. We know how meaningful that game is to those two teams, and it is going to be, it should be a great one, a war, no doubt. The game that starts the day, and you mentioned it, and I talked about it in the open, BYU and Texas Tech. I'll say this. I think the committee is cheering for BYU, because mm-hmm. I think it removes the decision of Notre Dame versus Miami out of their hands. Because if BYU wins this game, I think Texas Tech has proved enough, at least based off of their criteria, to get into the playoff. I don't think they would drop from, you know, number 4 all the way out. So if BYU were to win this game, I think they ultimately snag the final bid from Notre Dame and Miami, because they would get the auto bid for the Big 12. I don't know if they can do it, though, man. I mean, you look at that game that they played in Lubbock, and it was 29-7. And we'll talk about this with Brett, because he was at the game. It should have been worse. I mean, that was an absolute ass kicking on November 8th. Texas Tech closed as a 13.5-point favorite in that game. I laid it in that game. And Wes, I have not bet this game. You and I don't love to lay big numbers, but it would actually be favorite or pass. I like this Texas team a lot. And BYU, look, they're 11-1. They overcame a bizarre situation in the offseason, losing their starting quarterback. But Man, it's hard for me to envision a path to a victory here for Kalani Sitake's squad.
Yeah, it is for me. And by the way, Sitake, of course, do they get a little bit of a motivational thing here where he did, I'm not leaving, basically, as he is not going to state college. He is going to stay at BYU. And I thought that that made sense. God, how long has he been on this BYU staff? For, you know, a decade and a half plus. So I feel like he feels like this is home and they're one game away, obviously, from going to the playoff. I don't know how BYU is going to score here is what worries me. And they really struggled to score in the first meeting down there in Lubbock. And based on the numbers, you think that's going to happen again. Texas Tech defense, by the way, number one in EPA per rush, number two in EPA dropback, number one in quality drive rate. They're just dominant. And Jacob Rodriguez, of course, leads that defense for the Red Raiders. And he's all over the field. And they just have dudes. And Texas Tech, they're kind of one of the emerging powers, I think, in college football, even though they're out there in the Big 12. And sometimes that Big 12 gets ignored by certain parts of the national college football media. They're getting guys. Their recruiting has gone through the roof because they've got some good NIL. And, you know, Joey McGuire, I think, has done a good job with these guys. So I don't know how BYU is going to score. So team total, what am I seeing? Under 17 and a half. I think there's even some 19 and a half out there. That would probably be where the way I would go. But I don't disagree with the market in terms of being on Texas Tech here. I just think that that defense is so dominant because we're not used to this with Texas Tech, right? These low scoring games, because we have that Mike Leach and Cliff Kingsbury and all those years where, you know, they're playing Oklahoma State and it's, you know, 59-56 or something. Well, that's not happening with this team. They're winning on defense and running game. And I think that's going to be enough against BYU, who has proven me wrong a lot this season. I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop on BYU at some point. But they find ways, and they've got a lot of quality wins, too, on that resume. A lot of those conference wins, you know, of teams that won 8-9 games. So BYU is legit, I think, in terms of a playoff contender. But they may get knocked out here by Texas Tech in a big way.
Yeah, and the question is, will they drop from 11 to 12? Will Miami jump them if they were to lose this game, as we talked about a little bit in the open there? All right, we'll wrap on the ACC championship. Oh, what a thrilling game. Virginia and Duke, you know, we saw it back in November, and I said, I want to see that one again. A game in which Virginia went to Durham, outgained Duke 540-255. We get it again because of a five-way tiebreaker. Duke gets the nod in the conference. So they were a five-point dog, Virginia was, at Duke. They win convincingly, Wes, and now they're a 3.5-point favorite in Charlotte. 57.5 is the total. The total on November 15th was 60. What do you think of the ACC championship? Anything you're looking to bet here in this one?
You know, it's funny. I was having a discussion when I said, you know who the best hire of this cycle is, even though he's cost me and you and several of our friends money over the years? The best hire of this cycle is James Franklin at Virginia Tech, because he's thinking, if I can't win the ACC when you got Duke and Virginia in the ACC championship game, like, what's going on here? But nevertheless, they're here. And I think it's probably going to be a good game, even though it's getting ignored against kind of the 800-pound gorilla that is the Big Ten championship in that 8 o'clock Eastern Saturday window. I think you're going to get a high-scoring game here in Charlotte, another one with these two teams. They both can move the ball. Duke has a little bit of a problem with the turnovers. If you've watched them throughout the season, there are times where they give up some really bad field position. And Darian Mensah can the Illinois game is what comes to mind, mostly.
Georgia Tech, too.
Yes, absolutely. Where they turn it over in bad spots and give these teams short fields. And you can't do that with Virginia. Chandler Morris has been terrific for these guys. I know he missed a couple games with injury, but They've been able to, you know, move the ball. And Tony Elliott, he won't get it because there's a couple candidates ahead of him. Tony Elliott's done a really good job with this team, so I don't want to, like, make fun of Duke and Virginia here. I think Tony Elliott's done an excellent job with these guys, but I couldn't get there really on the spread. But over 57.5 makes a lot of sense to me, you know, barring the weather. We kind of saw that shootout last year with SMU and Clemson. I think we're getting another one in the ACC title game, so over for me.
Yeah, man, a lot of similarities. I only have one official bet so far. I'll certainly add to the card for tomorrow's podcast. But to sum it up, Wes, your best bets for championship weekend.
Yeah, let's go with The first one, Kennesaw State, Jacksonville State over 59. We'll call it 59 and a half. I think that's more readily available. I will say also for another best bet, I know we didn't cover it as much, but I kind of like the under in the MAC title game in Detroit with Miami of Ohio and Western Michigan. Miami on defense, and then obviously using the other quarterback because Daquan Finn, you know, quit on the program late in the season. So I think it's going to be Henry Hessian, but would look the under in that game. Duke, Virginia over 57.5. And Indiana plus the points and also a little bit of money line. I think this isn't just the homerism in me, Tim. I think Indiana's going to win this football game. It just matters so much to these guys. Like you said, this is their Super Bowl, and I think they're going to play like it here. The crowd we expect is going to be about 2/3, 1/3 for what little that's worth, Indiana on Saturday. So, you know, big time for Indiana. They weren't ready for the smoke. They weren't ready for the spotlight last year in Columbus and then obviously up in South Bend in the playoff. I think they're ready for it. I think this is a much different team this year, and they're taking a much different approach. They're not here just because they're happy to be there. They're here to win, and I think they're going to on Saturday.
The premier Indiana football program will be on display Saturday night on Fox, while my Irish will be sitting at home and hoping and praying that they can find a way into the college football playoff. Wes, I know you're headed to Indianapolis back home. Enjoy the trip, and we will talk to you next week. We'll have playoffs, we'll have bowl games, a whole lot to get into next week. Much appreciated, sir.
You bet, Tim. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Wes Reynolds. Follow him on Twitter at WesReynolds1. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Brett Ciancia, Pick Six Previews. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And we keep it rolling here on the podcast, and we are joined, as always, here on Wednesdays by Brett Ciancia, Pick Six Previews. I know we missed him last week with the holiday schedule, but he did join me. He was kind enough to join me on the tailgate show, which was much appreciated. But, of course, check out Pick Six Previews. Still great information. The Pick Six Plus. I was chatting with Dustin Sweetelson, who hosts the Cashing Out program after my show on VSiN, Brett, and he always has the Pick Six Previews printed out there on the sheet. He said it cuts down his prep time about in half each and every week. So, hey, at least one person is in love with the Pick Six Plus. And I could say it's not just him. It is many more. So it's been a great product. And hopefully you've seen the dividends this year.
Yeah, well, that's great to hear. Thanks, Tim. And thanks, Dustin, over there at VSiN. And yeah, it's been a great year for Pick Six Plus. You know, it was a little nerve wracking at the end there on Rivalry Saturday. But now that the dust has settled, we finished 6-1 in the win totals. That's a huge win for us now heading into playoff season. So that was a great start. And let's finish it strong in playoffs. But no, I appreciate all the feedback, all the tweets about Pick Six Plus. I think it's been a success, but let's keep it rolling.
Well, we got four Power Four championships to get to. Before we dive into it, I always love kind of checking in the game grader where your numbers are at. So we have concluded the regular season. Run through your top five or six teams and how they've kind of graded out as the year has gone on.
Absolutely. Well, you start at the top with Ohio State. I think that's no surprise. They're the number one team in the country, defending national champs. Could be the best defense in the country. I think by most metrics they are. And that was after sending so many guys to the pros and a new coordinator, they reloaded right away. You could argue five All-American candidates on that defense alone. So they're number one. I didn't even get to talk about their offense. They're so strong. So they're the best overall team. Number two and three is basically a virtual tie in the numbers between Indiana, the other undefeated team, and Texas Tech, a team I've been high on all the way since July. We've talked ad nauseum about them, and finally the committee's catching up. They have them now projected with a first round bye. I think they should be rewarded if they were to go win and make it a 12-1 season. So with Indiana, it looks like they have 13 guys on the field when you watch them play. They're so well coached. Fernando Mendoza, a very clean quarterback, no mistakes, a lot of playmakers on the outside. So a lot to like from Indiana. a complete team. Texas Tech, another elite defense. You know, Ohio State's got five All-Americans. I could argue three for Texas Tech, led by Jacob Rodriguez, the Heisman candidate, David Bailey off the edge, the nation's sack leader, and then Lee Hunter, a big nose tackle. So an elite defense. You know, I got to see them live. They looked the part of a championship caliber defense. I think they can make some noise in the national bracket. From there, number four, I have Notre Dame. And this is a team that if you stop watching them after the first two games, they are looking as strong as anybody in the country the last 10. They're one of those teams that in my metrics, my numbers, elite on both sides of the ball. You find them top 10, top five in almost every category. So they are just rounding into playoff form here. I hope there's a way to get them both in the playoff with Notre Dame and Miami, who I have number five. And I'm really impressed with Miami, too. Of course, they have the head-to-head over Notre Dame, but took some worse losses. That's another category, too. They lost to Louisville and SMU, teams that went 8-4. But I love their defensive line, Reuben Bain. Defense is nasty. And that's what separates Miami from last year's Hurricanes team is last year the defense team was awful, or the defensive side of the ball was awful. This time, it's a strength. It could be one of the best in the country up there with the elites. And then real close there, number six, I'll throw in, is Oregon. So that's my top six. You know, notice no SEC teams in that top six. I think the other conferences, the top of their leagues have really challenged the SEC's top of their conference. So we'll see how that holds into the playoff bracket. But yeah, this year is wide open, I feel like, and I'm really excited to watch it.
Yeah, I mean, jumping into the championship games, and we'll discuss the four Power Four conferences with you. Look, Indiana taking on Ohio State. We just broke it down with Wes Reynolds. He'll be at the game. Obviously, he's an Indiana alum. He's all fired up. You know, this is such a unique game. And, you know, Brett, every week I talk about situational spots. Now we're in championship week, right? We're in bowl season. We're in playoff world. There's going to be no letdowns. I actually could make an argument that this might be a letdown for Ohio State off of the Michigan win. And as people have discussed, what do they have to play for here in this championship game against Indiana? We know that Kirk Cignetti and his squad will be raring to go. The market has agreed. This number's come down from 6 down to 4.5. What are your numbers jump out like for Indiana and Ohio State on Saturday night?
Yeah, well, in terms of a letdown, that's a good point. It's funny to say that about a conference title game, but coming off that Michigan win, those seniors hadn't experienced a Michigan win. So that was almost like a bowl game itself. Now, they also haven't experienced a Big Ten title either. So I think that's still on their checklist here. I think they're going to be focused in. And Ryan Day, he's really good at getting them laser focused here. No letdown. So I see the point. I think I'm going to still go Ohio State. On paper, these teams, I mean, you can look at Pick Six Plus. You can see any stat you want, advanced stats, opponent adjusted. It's all green. It's all top 10 numbers for both these teams. You know, I have Ohio State by 5.5. So that's similar to Vegas and maybe a little lean with Ohio State. But I do wonder that, you know, the way that they've approached this season, they've gone such a slow tempo. They're the slowest tempo in America, actually. And when you look at total snaps, they're like 200 snaps behind the average team, meaning they played like two less full games. So I wonder if the power ratings aren't catching up to that. You know, if they are forced to go pedal to the metal for 60 minutes in a real, you know, bout for bout kind of fight, maybe that power rating increases more towards Ohio State. So you also look against the spread, and I love my trends here. I've got them all. Ohio State 3-0 against the spread versus ranked teams, and then 10-1-1 overall this year. I mean, one of the best spread teams in the country there with Texas Tech. So I'm going Ohio State to win it and cover that 4.5, even as much as 6, I'd say. I'll go Ohio State.
We'll take a step further. Since the loss to Michigan, 14-1-1 against the spread. They have not lost a game, as we all remember. Won the national title a year ago and now are undefeated. I'm excited for this game. I have not betted one way or the other, so I'm kind of going back and forth a little bit on this particular game. You mentioned Texas Tech, BYU. You do a lot of work with those two programs. You went to this game just a little while ago. It was a Texas Tech dominant performance. Before we get into this game here, what did you grade out Texas Tech BYU prior? How impressive was this win by Texas Tech over BYU back on November 8th?
Yeah, game I was at, I was very impressed with them. Like I said, championship caliber defense. They were swarming BYU. They held BYU to 7 points. Never let Bear Bachmeyer and LJ Martin, the big backs in the backfield there, a big quarterback, basically two linebackers at quarterback and running back for them, but never let them get loose. I thought that score was a little misleading, and I say that you would look and see 29-7. You'd think that was a blowout. Texas Tech had 7 trips to the red zone, only converted 2 to touchdowns. You know, if you convert some of those field goals to touchdowns and improve that red zone offense a little bit, that could have been a 42-7, a 45-7. It could have been an absolute blowout. So in terms of game grader, this was one of the top 10 games of the year in terms of most statistically dominant, even in spite of that 22-point final score. It was like plus 150 in yardage. The yards per play was tilted towards Texas Tech. So coming off of that, I think you're going to see a repeat, if not more. That's why I have it. I have a projected Texas Tech by 14. I think that's near Vegas. Vegas has, I think it's been in between 12 and 13. It's been fluctuating, but I see 2 touchdowns plus for Texas Tech. I really do. I don't see a single weakness on this team. And when you adjust for opponent with BYU, they come back down to earth a little bit. They're outside the top 25 in a lot of my numbers. So I think Texas Tech, hey, they are an absolute machine. We talk against the spread with Ohio State, 11-1 this year against the spread. And one more fact for you with Texas Tech. You can tell I'm fascinated with this program. You know, all the oil money came together this year. They went for it and they got it. In terms of 20 plus point wins, so you're talking blowout wins, they have 11 this year. And that's only one of 3 teams all time in the playoff era, the last 11 years, that have done that. It's like Alabama in 18, Ohio State in 19, and this Texas Tech team. So very elite company, blowing everybody off the schedule. I think you're going to see another one here. So I'll go I'll go Texas Tech by 17 to 21 points.
All right. Texas Tech, guns up, Red Raiders. And then that leads to the discussion, and we won't do it here because, once again, we're a betting podcast. If it's a blowout, does BYU drop below Miami? Does that have Miami next to Notre Dame? Does Miami get in? And that'll be the whole song and dance come Sunday. But I want to talk about the other two games, and let's hit the SEC championship game, because this is a rematch of what we saw earlier this year, Alabama taking on Georgia. And going back to September 27th, take us inside the numbers of that game, because you got to give credit to Alabama. They came out swinging, had an early lead, shut out in the second half. So how did that game back on September 27th in Athens get graded out by you?
Yeah, this was a virtual tie, if you think of it this way. I mean, it was a toss-up kind of game, a coin flip game. Now, you credit Alabama for getting the W. They went into what was at the time the nation's longest home win streak. It was 31 games there between the hedges. They go in there, they get the W. So I'm not going to fault them for it. But when you look at the advanced stats, it was not anything dominant. It was 24-21, a field goal win. Like you said, outgained in the second half, blanked in the second half. And then when you look at yards per play and the overall margin, that all tilts towards Georgia. In fact, if you look at yards per play margin, Georgia plus 1.6 yards per play. I know that's sounding a little bit nerdy and all, but that's a pretty big margin. That's significant for Georgia. So maybe a little misleading. I'll call it a toss-up. So now that we're a month and a half later, 2 months later, I mean, both these teams look different. Georgia has started to pull away from their opponents a bit. Remember back in September, October, they were in close battles week to week. I think in Texas, they really showed me something the way they pulled away in the fourth quarter. Gunnar Stock and so resilient in the fourth quarter all season, really. He gets it done with his legs and arm. I like their power running backs. And I think this defense is just improving. So I know that Alabama won the first matchup in Georgia, but I think now a rematch spot, I think Georgia's going to win it here. But my numbers have it really tight. I have it within a point. I mean, this is a pick 'em virtually for me. So I did something too with Pick 6 Plus this week. You'd always hear on the radio and in text that, it's hard to beat a team twice, you know, all this rematch talk. So I charted it. The last 25 conference title rematches, you know, talking SEC, Big 12, ACC, 12-12-1 against the spread. When you look at the team that won the regular season game, how they're going to perform in the rematch, 12-12-1. It's basically 50-50. So let's line it back up. Let's do it again. I think Georgia's going to get this one.
All right. I agree with you. And, you know, one of the things that I've mentioned a lot that I really like that what you do is the last four games. And while they're not that far away from a ranking standpoint, your metrics point out that Georgia's been better these last four games. And I agree with that. So Georgia was the first bet that I made of the week, laid the money line as soon as that came out at minus 120. It's climbed a little bit here, but I think Georgia gets it. And I know Georgia's had some issues under Kirby Smart against Alabama, 1-7 against Alabama so far in those games. All right, we'll wrap with the most exciting championship of the Power Four. Virginia and Duke opened up the show a little bit talking about the ACC and just their idiotic ways of figuring out the tiebreakers, but we like talking games, so there's no reason to try to fix things nowadays. We're getting Duke and Virginia again. I have some people that I know that listen to this podcast that have a long ticket on Duke to win the conference championship, so best of luck to them. What do your numbers have for this game in Charlotte on Saturday night?
It's fascinating how this ACC race came to be. I mean, when you look back in July and August in the preview magazine, I talked about it. Both these teams went out and they made some significant NIL plays that you wouldn't expect from with Duke, a basketball program, you know, a basketball school in Virginia, really struggling under Tony Elliott the first couple years there. They rallied some NIL money and put it to use. Duke, the big quarterback signee, Darian Mensah, he went on to break the school record for passing touchdowns. He's got 27 this year. So that money was well spent. It got him into the ACC title game. With Virginia, they rallied up a lot of cash too. Instead of firing and rehiring, they just doubled down on Elliott and his staff and loaded the NIL markets. And they signed a top 20 transfer haul, which might not sound that impressive, but for Virginia standards, that's huge. And look no further than Chandler Morris, their quarterback, and Jamari Taylor, their running back, getting it done in, on the ground and in a throw game too. So yeah, I mean, it's money well spent for both these teams. I don't think anybody pegged this. I think coming into it, Duke was like ninth in the ACC and Virginia was like 13th in the preview, something like that. But yeah, here we are. I think Virginia is the biggest game grader versus Vegas spread that I've got this week. A lot of them are within a point or two. This one tilts Virginia by four extra points compared to what Vegas has it. So I have Virginia by 8, line currently around a field goal. So some significant value on Virginia, I think. And what the difference is the defenses, because Duke's defense has been really weak. They're in the bottom 5 of my opponent adjusted number on defense. And I think that Chandler Morris and that offense of UVA is going to get their yards, get their points. So they won the first game significantly. I know we just talked rematches, but that was a significant win. That was, you know, Virginia by 17 and plus 300 in yardage. So I think you have two different teams here. One last note, you talked about it for the last game. Looking at the last four games, game grader, the heat check, right? UVA coming in number 12, very solid last month of November. Duke 48th out of Power Four. So significant difference there if you look in last four. I'll go UVA to cover.
Brett, always appreciate it. It's been a fun run this season, and we're going to run it back once the playoffs are here. Will you be putting this out for folks when it comes to playoffs and bowl coverage?
Yeah, absolutely. So we still have four more editions to go. We're going to get one out for bowl season, the first round of the playoff, the quarterfinals, the semis, and the national title. So, and I think now that we have playoffs coming, I'm going to do some more written content, some deeper dives into these games when there's only two or four a week as we go on. So I put the updated schedule there to the subscribers, but it's going to be sporadic before each round. You know, one before each round going forward. So if you're interested, go check it out. It's Pick6Previews.com, Pick 6 Plus. Check it out on Twitter at Pick 6 Previews. We'd love to have you on board. And 6-1 against the spread in the win totals this year. I was really excited with that. Came down to SMU-Cal. I don't know. I had the SMU under, and that was a heck of a game. I know that most people weren't even watching it, but SMU-Cal, if you were on either side of that win total bet, oh my gosh, what a roller coaster. And we got over the top with Bama and Miami this week hitting their overs to join USC, Washington, and TCU. So a heck of a year with the win totals. We've been talking about it all summer, all fall. So just glad to see that go over the finish line, 6-1.
No doubt. And it's been great talking to you, reading Pick 6 Plus all season long. We'll check in with you right before the playoffs. So we'll give you a couple weeks to digest all of the info. Brett, appreciate it. And we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Thanks, Tim. Hey, it's been an honor being on this season. Let's keep it rolling in the playoffs.
There he is. Brett Ciancia at Pick Six Previews. Thanks to Wes Reynolds. Thanks to Rick and Ryan, our producers, for this podcast. I'm Tim Murray. We'll be back tomorrow breaking down Championship Week right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.